So my kids came and told me there's a new grading system coming up. They get 50% free. Every kid gets 50% floor for every test. You can retake the test if your grade is less than C. Once you get to a C, no more retakes.
So essentially they will know the answers, right?
That's what we argued. If you're late submitting an assignment, it's okay.
So no homework?
No homework.
So why is the school rolling out to the whole district?
We don't understand.
Some California school districts are adopting a new grading policy known as Grading for Equity, which has raised concerns among parents. Sangeeta Shambhur is one of the parents in Dublin Unified, where grading equity is being put into practice.
Parents are not happy because all of a sudden, if you put a different grading scale, the students will not understand.
To understand this concept better, we sit down with Joe Feldman, author of Grading for Equity, and Superintendent Chris Funk of Dublin Unified.
A student could have identical performance, but get a different grade depending on which teacher they had. I found that there were ways that we could improve grading. We can make grading more equitable, which means more accurate and more fair and more motivational for students.
Some of the changes that we're making is not going to impact a student that is a high achiever. We simply want grades to reflect students' mastery of the content. We want it to be more fair.
We also sit down with Lori Sargent, a Dublin Unified school teacher, who was on the committee to review the pilot program.
While I agree with Mr. Feldman's equity grading, there's certain tenets of it. There's other things that I question.
Today, we'll look into what this new grading method is, how it works, and what it means for parents, teachers, and students in California. Make sure to watch this until the end to hear all different viewpoints on this. I'm Siamak Kurami. Welcome to California Insider.
Sangeeta, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Great to be here, Siamak.
We want to talk to you about a phenomenon that's happening in your school district, and it's coming across in California and expanding to the rest of the nation. It's called grade equity. Your school has implemented this, right?
Yes. It's going to be implemented in all classes across all grades starting next year. Right now, they were experimenting. Like a few classes have equity grading and some don't. So that's why some parents are aware of it. They know the impact of grading for equity and some don't.
There's a big group of you that are protesting these.
Yes. So it happened because of last 2 years I've been experimenting. So some parents have gone through it. They've seen their kids go through grading for equity and they know what impact it has. So they came to the board meetings, they spoke, we shared stories, and we gave all sorts of feedback to the board. And we met much after that. The board listened to us, and at some point they said, okay, the parents are not happy, let's stop the experimentation. We will not do the cohorts for middle school and high school. Because all of a sudden, if you put a different grading scale, the students will not understand. It will be difficult for the students. So they stopped it. They said they would stop it. But then we heard whispers that the teachers are still going ahead with it.
From what we are told, this is supposed to help the students. Can you tell us how it works?
So they say that not everybody is from the same socioeconomic status. So it may be difficult for them to come to school on time. They may have siblings to take care of, so they cannot do homework. So hence, they remove all those aspects away from grading. If you're late submitting an assignment, it's okay.
So no homework?
No homework.
And then you can also retake the tests?
Yes. You can retake the test as per the cohorts that are going on. You can retake the test if your grade is less than C. Once you get to a C, no more retakes.
So you can take as much to get to a C?
Yes.
So do they give assignments?
No. So after we fought, there have been two changes. In the latest board policy, they say that homework can be up to 10% of the grade. It's not required. It's subjective. You can have 10% for homework.
So it's not required?
Not required.
But if you do it, you get 10%?
Not more than 10% value.
So how did you notice this? Can you tell us your story? How did you find out about this with your kids?
So my kids came and told me there's a new grading system coming up last May or April. They told me, new grading system is coming up. My teacher told me about this. I don't think it's going to be good for us, and it's not good for anybody. They understood the equity grading system. So I was taking it cool. Okay, let's see. You know, my daughter is telling, she's not an adult. She's a child. Maybe she's misunderstanding it. It's not possible that the school system would do this. And then in summer, my friend texted me and said, you know what, my son had grading, this equity grading last year, and he received 92.7%, and it was considered a B. A is usually 89.5 to 100. He received 92.7, but yet it was marked as a B grade. So that was unfair. He didn't have homework. So he did not know what he did not understand. There were only tests. So since he did not have practice, he didn't learn because he didn't know what he was doing wrong.
So in your district, they implemented this last year as an experiment.
Yes. That my friend told me about it, and she invited me to a board meeting. That was my very first board meeting at the Dublin United School District. I have not been involved in the school so far. I totally trust this district. This is America. Nothing can go wrong.
And then what was the experience with the school district?
Yes, so we attended the board meeting. I attended one. I saw like 30 parents coming and actually giving examples of what their kid faced. They spoke about it. They gave evidence. They gave data. And then we had a special board meeting. And that's where they decided, okay, no more experimentation for middle and high school. That was our ask. We said, even if you want to experiment with a new system, start it at the elementary level so that they go through this whole process of grading and then they come to middle school and they can continue to high school. If you start it at once at high school when the stakes are high, they're applying for college, you know, it'll have a negative impact on them.
And what's the impact from the parents that have seen it? What do you guys have seen so far?
So they say that it's a 50% floor. They get 50% free. Every kid gets 50% floor for every test.
So you already get 50% no matter what?
No matter what. So it's easy to get to 50, and then, you know, you have to just increase it to get to a
60 or and 70.
Yeah, yes.
And then you get a D or a C.
Yes, and they can take retakes and come to a C.
So they get up to 50. They can retake the test if they don't pass?
Yes.
And would the test change?
No.
It's the same test?
Yes.
So essentially they will know the answers, right?
That's what we argued. And they said, why are you against if you're helping somebody to pass, somebody who's not able to, how does it impact your child? And how does it impact our child? Because there's a kid who actually does the homework, does the study guide, comes home, studies, goes prepared for the exam, and gets a C or a B or an A. Whereas there are some students who just get it. It's not fair.
So let me get this straight. For our audience members to understand this, because this will impact everybody here in California. So essentially you have 50% is free.
Yes.
You just get that anyways. But then if you get a B, then you're stuck at a B.
Yes.
You can't retake the test.
Yes, that is the problem, yes.
But if you get a D, you can retake it, and you'll have the same questions.
Yes.
So you might even get an A if you work for it.
It's not mentioned in the board policy, but yes, it's subjective, if the teacher allows.
And no assignments, no coming to class, participation.
That all is not included, yes. And no homework, I'll repeat, because it's 10% right now, but it's not required.
The idea is to help those people that are not passing to get a C.
Yes.
You mentioned some of the students are impacted, the ones that were B's and A's, when they don't do the homework. How does that impact?
Because you have not practiced it. They say that homework is not required. Kids don't like to do homework, which is a fact. Even my kids don't like to do homework. Which kid would not like to do homework? If I tell them to do, you know, just play the whole day, they'll be okay with that. And that's what the survey will tell them. Yes, I want to play the whole day. I don't want homework. But that's not what is right for them. So if they don't do homework, they have not practiced, especially for science subjects, where you have to spend some time outside of class trying to learn or practice. If you don't practice a math problem and the teacher doesn't grade it, you don't know what you did wrong. And then directly you have a test. And some kids have test anxiety. And then what they're doing is the final exam, they're making it really difficult. They'll have a few questions that has not been taught at school or that's very abstract, so that the chances of getting an A is almost nil. And you can get a B only if you're perfect. Like, you know, if you should not make any mistakes, because there's some questions that are already out, like, you know, there's no chance that you'll do it. Kids have given up. My kids were telling, the morale is low. Like, kids who used to get A before are getting Bs, and who used to get B before are getting Cs. I want to talk to you about an incident. So we parents went to a newspaper and we got an article published. The journalist came to the school and interviewed two kids, random kids. They are not part of the student body, they're not student leadership, nothing. They gave their experience and they said exactly what I said, that in a biology class, it's almost impossible to get an A. And because of the A, B, C, D scoring, A is 95, B is 85. So you either get a 85% or a 95%. In the old system, you could get to a 90%, a 91%, and you could get an A. In the new system, no. There is nothing between 85 and 95.
Either getting 85 or 95.
Yeah. So they score all the tests, like a unit one, unit two test, the unit tests that are in between on these bases, and then they convert it into 100. When they convert it into 100, it won't equal to like 91, 92, and all that.
So it'll be either 95 or 85.
Yes.
So they're set numbers.
Yes.
And the idea is to bundle people closer.
Closer.
So like
equity.
You get in the middle. So let me get this straight. So there's questions outside of the class that are very difficult on the exam.
Yes.
So it will be harder to get an A.
Yes.
Or B.
Yes. Majority Bs and Cs, and a very few people A. They have not eliminated Ds and Fs as yet, but many school districts have. That is where the California Department of Education is going. There are some school districts that have eliminated Ds and Fs. They say it's demotivating.
So basically, if you're just participating, you're in school, you're going to pass. You take the test, but then you can go back, look at the answers, retake it.
Yes.
So you're a parent, you know, and you're an immigrant. What do you think is the impact?
Most of us in our district are immigrants. So we come here legally through our jobs. And to get the jobs, we are educated. So hence, we want our kids to be college educated too. And now it makes it difficult to get into colleges. I'll show you some data. The number of kids that are getting into UCs and CSUs has decreased. The number of kids that are going into community colleges have increased. AP scores have decreased over the last 3 years.
You guys think it's because of this?
Yes.
Is it the study done on these students that have been taking these classes? Or
I have data from the school itself. So Shyamak, see, look at this. Class of 2022. You can see which colleges they're going through, and this is community college.
So the number of students going to UC has decreased?
Yes.
And Cal State has decreased. Is it because they're relying on the GPA to get in?
Yes.
And now the GPAs are lower because it's hard to get an A?
Yes. And also there are, the UC has changed its rules. Even they are looking at other factors rather than just GPA.
What factors?
Socioeconomic conditions and historically underserved students.
So they're not looking at the academic achievements as much?
Yes, that's also a factor.
Okay.
And the GPA has decreased. If you compare,
so the GPAs have gone down.
From 2022 and 2023, the advanced placement also score has gone down. From 4.17, it's come to 4.00.
And these are on the students that have been going through these tests.
Yes.
Pilot program.
So here's an example of AP English Lit over 2 years. 21-22, it was 64.3% received an A. And in the next year, it decreased to 41.9.
Wow.
So there's a whole slice that's gone, and they're in the B category now.
So there is more Bs and Cs and less As.
Yes. There's no F.
So why is the school rolling out to the whole district?
We don't understand. We've asked that at every board meeting. Some other parent has asked this question. We are a school district with 97.3% graduation rate. There are 3% who do not graduate. In order to raise them, we do not understand why they have to change a grading system that impacts everybody.
And there's hundreds of parents? How many? A lot of parents are involved, right?
Actually, there's more than hundreds, actually. So we had a change.org petition, and there was over 1,600 parents that signed that petition. So it's actually a pretty large group.
What are the concerns that these parents have?
Yeah, so for the past 2 years, there have been parents very vocal at board meetings. From my perspective, it seems as though the board just dismisses the concerns of the parents and steamrolls people and just does whatever it is they want to do. So that is the biggest thing that I'm seeing here. There's a major disconnect between parents and the administration, and we feel like what's being said is falling on deaf ears.
So you guys go to these board meetings. Can you explain to us how does it look like when you go to these board meetings?
Well, I don't personally attend board meetings because I think they're a waste of time, honestly. I think that the administration has their own agenda, and sure, they may give you a moment or two to speak out and say something, but you're not really considered. I've attended the board meetings online. Many parents have spoken out and said that they're totally against this. They've even tried compromising and saying, you know, maybe we need to reassess this and have a grading committee look into this. And it has gone nowhere. And then over time, what I'm seeing is that there's a lot of topics that are covered in the board meetings, and they will push this one thing in terms of specifically about the grading. They'll push it all the way at the end of the meeting to where they don't even touch it until like 11 o'clock at night, midnight. I mean, if you change the grading system and a person graduates and they're still reading at a fourth grade level, then how exactly does that fix the issue? It doesn't. So I think we need to stop playing games here, and we need to get to the root cause of what's going on here. There needs to be a stronger effort to have relationships between the district and parents so we can work together and do what's in the best interest of our kids.
I was shocked, actually. I was disillusioned with what was happening. The trustees are represented, the people elected representatives, we elect them. And they are the people who hire the superintendent. So basically, they're the boss of the superintendent, right? We thought they would listen to us. Their job is to listen to parents and bring about changes. That was not happening. They denied, no, we are not reducing your grades. There is no grade deflation. First, we were all angry, frustrated.
And this is kind of across the board?
Most of the parents. Some parents still don't understand how it's going to impact the kids. Some say, oh, my kid is very intelligent. It won't impact my kid. Because it's an experiment. Maybe their kid did not go through a class which had equity grading. Some say it's okay, it's always happened, you know. Every teacher teaches differently. They all have their individual style of grading. Maybe so. What's different now is teachers don't have autonomy. Starting next year, every teacher is forced to grade using grading for equity. So that's the difference.
And why are you guys doing it? Why are you being vocal? Because it's not easy to do this, right?
So we come to America, we think this is the best place in the world, our kids will get the best education, and that to a free education. You know, where I grew up, I went to a private school, and the facilities was not half as good as what my kids get at a public school. So we have very high regard for the teachers. The teachers know every student here. When I grew up, there were like 60 students in the class. The teachers didn't know us by name. They just came, they thought, and they went. So I have very high regard for the teachers here, the school system, everything. So we never thought that something like this would happen here. We didn't think that the grading system would be changed. They would divide kids based on their ancestry or their socioeconomic conditions and all those. And they provide the resources, the same resources, and even extra resources for kids who need them. They provide free bus tickets, bus passes. They provide free food, they can check out Chromebooks. There is free tutoring. My kids use the tutoring at Dublin High School. So they have all these facilities, and it's publicized. It's not like they don't know about it.
So they have to see how to use these resources, not bring about this grading change. So we immigrants are thinking, oh my God, I came here, now our kids are going to be impacted. That's a huge thing for us immigrants because we come for better life. We want equal opportunities, but it's not happening now. It's not going to happen in the next year.
We're covering California issues, as you know. If you want us to cover the stories that are impacting your day-to-day life in California, reach out to me at siamak@californiainsider.com.
Now, do you have any other thoughts for our audience, Sangeeta?
Yes, I want to make this very clear that the grading for equity does not help the both ends of the spectrum, the low-performing kids or the high-performing kids. For the low-performing kids, they're giving these grades, they're inflating the grades, they'll push them off to college, and they will not be ready. They're setting them up for failure. If you see, there's a new UCLA article that says that many students are failing the medical competency exams. You can't just move kids from one level to another unless they're proficient in that subject. They should learn the material before pushing them ahead. So it's not going to help them. And the other end of the sub-spectrum, it's like they're creating roadblocks for students. And that's totally unfair.
You've come up with this concept, right? Can you tell us what it is?
Yeah, so it's not totally my idea. I've really tried to draw from other researchers and around grading, as well as motivation theory and adolescent development. But, I'm just a former teacher and a principal and was a school district administrator. And noticed when I was a principal and administrator is that you could have two teachers teaching the same subject, but they would have different ways of grading. And so a student could have identical performance, but get a different grade depending on which teacher they had. And so I started researching this and trying to figure out why, because grades are so important to parents and to students. You know, it decides whether they get on honor roll or they can play on the athletic field or scholarships or graduation or college. And as I researched, I found that a lot of these practices that we use now are essentially the same as from the Industrial Revolution when they started. And there's been no real changes, in part because teachers don't get any real training in how to grade. And so most of the times we have no choice as teachers but to replicate how we've been graded. And so based on the research I did, I found that there were ways that we could improve grading. We can make grading more equitable, which means more accurate and more fair and more motivational for students. You know, we want our doctors and we want our architects. We want professionals to keep updating their practices based on new research and new methods. And we want the same of our teachers.
So how does this system work compared to the previous systems?
So it's really trying to make the grade only represent what a student has learned about the course. And we may say, like when I say that, that's nothing really radical, right? That's what we want our grades to do. We want our grades to be accurately describing what the student has learned. What many times happens is that teachers include lots of other information in the grade. Like, did they bring in a syllabus that was signed? Or did they come late to class? Or did they, you know, raise their hand before speaking? And while those things are important for students to learn how to do, we don't want to include them in the grade because it starts to warp the accuracy of the grade. I'll give you an example. Let's say a student was kind of at the C level of understanding the course content, but they came on time every day. They did lots of extra credit. They raised their hand before speaking. They brought in their signed syllabus. And so their grade becomes a B. Take another student in the same class who knows all of the content very, very well. They're an expert in the class. They could even teach the class, right? But they come late sometimes, and they don't raise their hand all the time before speaking. They didn't do the extra credit. And so their grade comes down to a B. So now you have two students who both have a B, but they're entirely different from each other. And so this work is about helping parents and students know exactly where the student is by excluding non-academic aspects from the grade.
So you're saying, based on what you came up with, there's a level of bias from the teachers that may not reflect the academic knowledge of the students.
We also want to make sure that the things that we do in our grading motivate students, that it uses accurate and sound mathematics principles. And in many ways, our traditional grading system doesn't do that.
So we were told that there's no need to do homework. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so There are many misunderstandings about this, I think in part because it's different than what parents have experienced in our past and what many students have experienced. So homework is a very important part of student learning. And in this, we expect teachers still assign homework. They still collect it. They still give feedback. They can even record it in the grade book, but they don't want to include it in the grade. And so I'll talk about why. So the first reason is that homework, teachers assign homework for practice, right? It's the time for students to make mistakes. So if I make mistakes on my homework and then learn all the way up to an A level, but all those mistakes in my homework are included in my grade calculation, even though I've mastered the content at the highest level, my grade will be lowered, right? It's like if I practice shooting free throws in the backyard and I miss some of them, and then when I go to the game, I make them all, but you subtract some of my points from the game because I missed them during practice, right? If homework is for practice, then how well I do or the mistakes that I make shouldn't be included in the grade. The second reason is that, you know, we don't know who's doing the homework, if it's actually the student's work. Some students have tutors, or they get AI to help them, or parents or siblings, and some students copy homework. So when we include homework in the grade, we don't know as teachers whose performance that is. And in fact, we're sometimes incentivizing students to copy because we say you have to hand in the homework. Even if you didn't understand it, you got to hand it in. So students will do all kinds of things just to get it in so they don't lose the points. And what we find is that when teachers don't include homework performance in the grade, there's no longer an incentive for students to copy. So all the homework they get back is actually students' work and the teachers can better support them. And even though initially when teachers do this, the homework drops, the number of students who hand in homework drops a little bit because it's new for them, students start to understand that the reason I do homework is to learn, is to practice, and then to be able to do well on the test or the project. And so then they start to do homework because they understand the reason for it. Homework is not something that they do for the teacher. Homework is something that they do for themselves. Just like I go out and shoot free throws because I know that when I practice my free throws, I'll do better in the game.
So if the kids don't do homework, then there's no consequence for them, or is there any?
Yeah. So teachers still can do all kinds of other consequences, right? You can have students have to stay after school, or they lose certain privileges at school. And of course, there's the consequence that if they don't do the homework, they're not learning and they're not going to do well on the tests. That's already built in to what teachers do. What this is about is that no longer can we include that consequence in the grade, because doing so warps the accuracy of the grade. And actually, that's what they'll need to do in college. You know, in college, no professor is saying, okay, you need to make sure you read these 50 pages for tomorrow, and I'm going to ask you to hand in a log. They're just going to expect you to do it and for you to understand as a student what those consequences are of not doing it. You're not going to learn. You're not going to be ready to do well in the class or on the test.
We've been told that you, in this model, you come already with getting 50%, and then from there you can get A, B, C, and then you can take the test again, and it's the same test. What are your thoughts on that? Is this accurate?
Yeah, so I'll talk about each of those things. So the first is, it sounds like people are talking that there's a minimum 50% on the 0 to 100 scale. So the 0 to 100 scale is where a 90 to 100 is an A, 80 to 90 is a B, 70 to 80 is a C, 60 to 70 is a D, right? Each of these are 10, 10, 10, 10, and then 0 to 60 is an F. And so that's 60 numbers for an F, and then 10 for everyone above that. And what that is, it's called a nonlinear scale, right? The 0 to 100 scale has an architecture, has a structure that pulls down grades. And I'll give you an example. So if a student had a B, and then they got another B, and then they got an F, and we were averaging those, we would say, wow, a B, and an F, that's probably like a C minus, maybe somewhere in there. But if a student got an 85%, which is a B, and another 85%, which is a B, and then got a zero, which is an F on the 0 to 100 scale, that averages to a 57, which is an F. And we would never say that a student who has a B, and an F should average to an F. And it's doing that because of the architecture of the scale. It pulls down grades. If we had the opposite scale, right, where 60 points, instead of 60 points being for an F, we had them for an A, and we said a 40 to 100 is an A, 30 to 40 is a B, 20 to 30 is a C, 10 to 20 is a D, and 0 to 10 is an F, and 40 to 100 a day, we would say that is absurd. That is a grossly inflating design. But we've just gotten used to one that is the same thing for an F, that is grossly deflating grades. It's pulling grades down because of the unsound structure of it mathematically. So there's two ways to fix the problem. The first is you say, I'm going to have a 50 to 100 scale, right? So now every letter is 10 points. 50 to 60 is an F, 60 to 70 is a D, 70 to 80 is a C, et cetera, right? So now you've got a linear scale. It's proportional. That's one way to solve the problem. But for many people, it's psychologically very difficult to get our heads around. Like, why would I give 50% for a student doing nothing, right? That feels really bad, even though the logic and mathematics makes sense. So we actually support and advise people to use a different scale, which is 0 to 4. So it's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. 0 is an F, 1's a D, et cetera. Which is exactly the GPA scale that students know, the grade point average scale, where you get a 4.0 for an A. And we find that solves the problem of making a linear scale, and you still get your 0 for the students who don't turn anything. For retakes, the idea is that we want students to have multiple opportunities to demonstrate their competence and their understanding, because that's how it is in the professional world, right? Anytime I have to demonstrate competence, driver's license, medical boards, the bar exam for lawyers, teacher credentialing exams. And so we want to replicate that, the way the professional world works around demonstrating competence in our classrooms. I leave it up to teachers to decide whether it's the same exam or a different one. I know many teachers will say, I'm going to create a new exam because if I give the same one, it won't be accurate because students will remember the answers. And other teachers say, well, you know, I'm giving a different kind of exam. I'm giving like an essay or something where I could give the same question because they're going to have to redo the entire complex answer.
And some other concerns that some of the parents have is that A students in this model of grading, they're becoming B students because it's a lot harder for people to get the A's. Has it changed the way the testing is done?
I don't know how different districts are actually implementing it. What sometimes they find is that there are fewer A's. And what it's signaling is that there was grade inflation that was happening, that students didn't actually know the content. They didn't, their understanding of the course was not as strong as they actually thought. And the way the traditional grading was fluffing grades. You know, we did an analysis over 21,000 grades and found that when we compare the grades to the standardized test for that course, you know, if I'm in a freshman English class, and I'm in a state where there's a ninth grade English course test that the state gives, we found that in those cases, over half the grades did not match what the test score was. Either was higher than the test score or lower than the test score. And we would hope that they would be the same because we want the grade to be accurately matching what the test score is.
And Joe, was there a time you saw that there's kids that are not getting the grades they deserve, or they're getting good grades because they get into the system by building a relationship with teachers? Was there a moment you saw that?
I can't point to a distinct aha moment. When I first was doing the research and identified this set of practices, I wasn't even sure they would work. I just partnered with one school and helped the teachers understand these ideas. And teachers would tell us that they assumed that by doing these things, it would make classes easier. It would lower the rigor of classrooms. And what they found is it actually increased it. What was happening is that students were hiding that they didn't know information, right? But they were concealing that by handing in homework because they got help and doing extra credit. And what this allowed is for the students and the teachers to know exactly where they were, and they couldn't hide whether they didn't know something. And they weren't being punished if they did, but just weren't following directions over here. There were other consequences for them. So it was really wonderful to see that it was really surprising how beneficial it was for so many students. And so then we expanded and started doing it with schools and districts across the country.
For the parents that are concerned about this, do you have any thoughts?
There's really no losers out of this. Now, I get it as a parent, because I'm a parent and I have kids in school. And if my kids are successful in school and I find out that the district is going to change the way that they're graded, like, that makes me nervous. And I have a lot of questions about that. But We think that when districts do this, when they spend enough time to educate parents and families and engage them and answer these questions and make sure that teachers are supported in these ways, that everybody's better.
I've been in education for almost 30 years. 20 plus of those have been in Dublin Unified. And so I've seen lots of practices and things like that in my time. This Grading for Equity, the grassroots or groundwork kind of brainstorming started about 2 years ago, I think, in our district. And I was on that committee and parents were invited. And we were just talking about it, trying to understand what it was. The district provided us all the books. A number of us read those and things, and we were starting those conversations. And I know there's a number of my colleagues who support this, and I respect that. And then a lot of the parents and some of the teachers even were like, well, we don't really understand this, so we're not grasping this. And so they kept moving it forward anyways. I think it's to increase graduation rates. Personally, it will elevate our graduation rates because you'll have fewer students failing. While I agree with Mr. Feldman's equity grading, there's certain tenets of it. There's other things that I question. One of the main things, which I agree with Mr. Feldman on, is in our credentialing programs, you know, teachers, they don't have like a course 101 on how to grade and things like that. And so, you know, he is accurate in that assessment and such. And then Mr. Feldman also says, which I agree with, we should have common gradient scales in regards to categories and common rubrics. So for example, if I'm a student and I take Algebra 1, it shouldn't matter what school I'm at in the district. We should all have like a 10% final and 20% classwork or whatever it is that's determined that is best to demonstrate student proficiency. So I do agree with all of those.
Now, some of the parents that we talked to, they were concerned about the homework aspect of this.
My problem with that is I need students to do independent practice, both in class and then outside of class and such, for a couple of reasons. One, it allows me to assess our students grasping the concepts I taught, and it directs my instruction. Like, ooh, the bulk of my students didn't get what I taught yesterday. I need to reevaluate what I did. It also provides me the opportunity to give feedback, immediate feedback to my students, so that they understand their progress, where they're having pitfalls in their learning or where they're excelling as we move through the unit. And I know Mr. Feldman's concept is, well, they can still do it and you can provide the feedback, but there's just no grade attached to it. And as wonderful as that sounds, I don't know that we're there yet because there's grades attached to it now and they don't do their homework or read the feedback. Unfortunately, they're teenagers. And then also deadlines, you know, in the real world, we have deadlines and there's accountability when you don't do things on time.
What are your thoughts on the grading scale where they get 50% is given to them and then from there it starts to go?
So the 50% floor to me doesn't actually make sense. I mean, I understand it. What it's going to do is it's going to elevate our graduation rates so that students that would normally fail classes will now pass, but they won't have the skills necessarily, but they'll have gotten enough because of a 50% floor to pass that class. And so my fear is those students then won't have the skills and the knowledge that they need to back those up in the real world. And the scale of 1 to 4, and that's an option. So not all teachers are doing that. As somebody who teaches English, when I look at my students' writing, there is degrees of writing even within the band of like, let's say a B from 80% to 89%. You know, I've seen students, I'm like, that's a B, regardless of how you look at it, B minus, B, B plus. And I get on a report card, it just reads as a B for their GPA and things like that. But in regards to a motivator for a student who's maybe, you know, working really hard and trying to improve their writing through their persuasive techniques of ethos and pathos and all of those different things, and they see, wow, I got an 88% and I've been working really hard, I'm almost at an A and that sort of thing. Whereas a student, conversely, who maybe got the 80%, I'm like, okay, you're right on the border there. And 80% is still a good grade, by the way, you know, but you're right on the border there. So, you know, because you had simpler sentences. So there's a big range there. And I think when you're dealing with high school students, that it's important that they see that they're making progress. And if you just give someone a 3, well, I don't know that I'm an 80%. Or an 89%. And there is a big degree or range in that area. And I think for me, as a motivator for students, when you see that you're getting closer to the next, whatever it might be, a B or a C or an A, that helps kids push through and they ask better questions, actually, like, what can I do? Because I'm almost at a B grade or I'm almost at an A grade. What can I do to improve my writing? Because they see that progress that they're making. Where if they just get a 3, they might just stay at a 3. So like, I'm never going to be an A writer.
But what about the concept of the kids being able to take the test multiple times?
The problem with this, if the students know I can retake the test as many times as I want, and or it's going to be the same test, well, then I'm not going to study. I'll go in, I'll see what the test is, and then I'll go back and study and do the retake. And so now we've just taught them to game the system. And so instead of going back and learning the skills, they're just like finding the answers to the tests. And in practicality, if I have 150 students as a high school teacher, and let's say I even have 40 kids who want to retake a test, when are they doing that? And things like public speaking, because in English, we have standards that are based on, speaking and listening. So there's public speaking things that you do that we assess. So when do I have them redo their public speaking assessments? Because that takes away from instructional time and such. And so while I see certain value in having students have the opportunity to maybe go back and look at the ones that they missed for partial credit or things like that, almost like test corrections. And maybe we do that with freshmen and sophomore or in the middle school levels where the kids are still emerging. But by the time you're a junior and a senior and in our AP classes, it doesn't teach them accountability. And also in the real world, there aren't a lot of do-overs, as we like to say. I know Mr. Feldman used the DMV example, I think, which is true. But there are penalties for that, though. Every time you do the retake, there's a retake fee. There's a timeline. There's a limit of so many attempts within a certain time period. And there's different tests. And again, it goes back to some teachers can choose retakes and others may not. So, there's a lot of, moving parts here that need to be worked out. And they actually say, well, it'll be a more accurate representation. But when you have a 50% floor, then no, it's actually not, because then those students are passing the class who normally would not be. So then we don't know that they actually need intervention. We don't, they've passed the class, they will graduate, and they may not even have the baseline skills. And remember, passing is 60%. So they won't even have the baseline skills potentially of 60%, to go out in the world and try and be successful. My own child experienced that, and she's in a neighboring district. So I come at this through the lens as a parent as well. And she's in high school, and her teacher did a similar type of grading thing, and it was like A, C, or F, something to that effect. And she's worked really hard and did this paper, and she's like, well, yeah, it's not an A paper, but because my teacher only graded A, C, or F, I got a C. And so she was, she was very disheartened by it, because she's like, I know I'm not an A writer, but I know it's not a C grade either. And so you just have these discrepancies from site to site, teacher to teacher. And that's still happening in Dublin Unified, though, as well, because we're not having the same standard scale or rubrics or a limit on how many attempts does each teacher give for Algebra 1, or do they give any at all? We need consistency. And that's something I'm all on board for, to be quite honest, but we don't have that. So again, we're in the same place where we started. The only difference is now you have a 50% floor, and so you'll have more kids graduating. It'll elevate the graduation rates because you'll have fewer kids failing.
Chris, this seems to be because of this change, and it's a big change for a lot of the parents, and the board probably is under a lot of pressure for a change like this. From what it seems like, you really believe in this. Can you tell us why?
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to answer that in two parts. The first part is I don't believe there's a whole lot of change. In all honesty, if you look at our original policy and the language in that policy and the new policy, there's not a whole lot of difference. What is different is we don't have a 0 anymore. But if I'm a parent of an A student, your student doesn't turn assignments in. They don't get 0s. So it's not going to impact them in any way. Having a 50% floor and you're an A student, that's not going to impact you in a negative way, right? Because you're an A student. You do your work and you get credit and you earn A's all the time. So those are probably the two biggest changes, right? A 50% floor and no zero. Otherwise, all the other changes have been around. And because we've been inconsistent from one teacher to the next, we've had teachers been practicing and doing no zeros or a 50% floor or zero to four for years now. It's just because we focused on it at the district level as opposed to individual teachers doing it. And the biggest reason why we're doing this, again, I go back to my 34 years and I've been in an administration now for what, 24 years. The complaints I get from students and parents is, I got a C+ and that's not a fair grade. Well, why is it not fair? Because the teacher doesn't like me. Well, why do you think the teacher doesn't like me? Well, because my friend did the same assignment and we did it together, and yet they got the higher grade than I did. Okay, so that's where the bias comes in. Or we get parents that say, well, wait a minute, we have two different teachers. The kids are doing, they do their homework together. They perform very similar on tests, but one got an A and one got a B because it's inconsistent in how the teachers grade things. And that's not fair. Or I hear that if you don't put your name and the date and what have you on the corner, on the left-hand side of the corner, and you turn it in and you don't have that, then I'm not going to give you any credit. You get a zero on that. Really? We're giving a zero because they don't have their first name, last name, the period, and the date on it? How does that reflect whether they did the work correctly? And so those are the reasons why we want to make this change.
Now, in terms of communicating with parents, some of the parents believe that the district didn't do a good job connecting with them and communicating with them. And this seems to be a really big change. What are your thoughts on that?
There are parents that have some concerns. There's no question about that. And they came to several board meetings. Hindsight, when we were done with the first task force and we shared the information out, we were working with Joe Feldman's group. One of the presenters from his group, I didn't think did a very good job. And in hindsight, we should have led that conversation because they were covering things that were not our priority. And so I'm just, you know, that's a lesson learned. But the challenge that I have with some parents is when they come to a board meeting and they give one example or they try to speak in broad strokes saying the community is upset. Well, if 22 to 30 parents show up to a meeting, that's significant. We need to listen to them. But what they were asking for was data that we weren't able to give them because it was still the semester was going on. We couldn't pull data on what final grades were going to be because we don't get those grades until the first week of June, right? And they're asking in April and in May, well, what's the impact to the grades? How is this going to impact my child going to college? Well, it was a pilot, right? 26 teachers. We can't tell you how that's going to impact going to college. That's why we wanted to do a second cohort and we have 80 more teachers involved because we said we're not going to implement everything. Let's figure out what works for Dublin and implement only those pieces. But it got to a point where the board said, you know what, there's enough pressure. We're going to stop it. So we stopped it. So the board listened to the parents. But 30 parents don't constitute 5,000 parents, right, in our district. And so I recognize that there's change, and I've committed to every year we will look at the data, and if things need to be adjusted, we will definitely adjust it. But you don't just stop because you don't like one experience. You don't just say, well, it's no good, it doesn't work. You've got to get more people involved and collect more data before you make those type of decisions.
And some of the parents are saying that it's very difficult to achieve the A grade, to get an A in this system. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't believe that it's going to be harder to get an A for those kids that their A represented mastery of content standards. There was an example that was given about a teacher that, you know, their grading was 85 or 95. And the way that teacher did that, we had to correct that teacher. So yes, there was an example of a teacher that was trying some new ideas, but not following the policy. And so we did correct that with that teacher when it came to our attention. And at any time, if a parent feels like the teacher is not following the stated board policy, then they need to go directly to their principal and share that concern, and or come directly to me and share it, and I will investigate it also. Because what we want it to be is more standardized. We want it to be more consistent. We want it to be more fair.
And what about homework?
What we ultimately came up with was there's two types of homework. One is a skill-based homework, and we said that could be up to 10% of your overall grade. And then there's the regular homework that you need to be prepared for your class. You know, if it's AP biology, you can't just simply go into a test without studying all the vocabulary that's in AP biology. I've been doing this starting my 35th year, and I've been in tons of math classrooms. And the first thing happens at the start of the day is teachers will go and see if you've done your homework. They'll check to see if you've done your homework. Checking and getting points for turning it in is not the same as the teacher actually reviewing, did you do your homework correctly, right? That's different. And so if I know I just have to turn it in to get points, I'm going to copy from someone to turn that in, right? Just to get the points, because I have five other classes I'm taking. We wanted to take the emphasis off the point getting, but never did we say there should not be any homework. That's just a misnomer. There's always going to be homework.
So one of the other concerns about this was that the test, if people can take the test again, from what we heard, maybe this might not be correct, but some teachers may not change the test. And then it would be very easy for kids to kind of do the test again because they know the questions, right?
I know very few teachers that don't have test A and test B. Because if I teach four sections of algebra, I'm going to have different tests for different periods, right? Because if I give the same test period 1, 2, 3, and 4, the kids in period 1 can text their friends, hey, this question is on the test. They get a greater advantage. So to say that you're going to retake and take the same test is crazy. And we're not saying unlimited. The teachers have to decide. This test, there's no retakes. This test, you can do one retake. You can't do any retakes if you haven't done the homework to show that you've done the practice. That's part of the policy, and that's part of the flexibility that we've given teachers. But it's got to be consistent among subject area teachers. So all English 1 teachers, all biology teachers, they have to have the same criteria, but the criteria for biology may be way different than the criteria for English.
And now, are you going to deploy this throughout the whole school system? Is that how it's going to be, through the whole district?
Yeah, so our the board approved the changes to the policy last year. So let me give you a little context. So 2 years ago, we had cohort 1 that had 26 teachers participate, and we had a task force made up of teachers and parents and students that were talking about grading for equity and standards-based grading. And at the end of the first year, we were going to do a second cohort so we can gather more data. And we had 80 teachers sign up for the second cohort. But that's when we had a group of parents in June, about 30, that came and said, hey, we're dissatisfied with it. Why are we doing this? We have concerns. And then we had another board meeting in July where the board was concerned about moving too fast. And they said, no, we're going to stop cohort 2. And so that happened. Cohort 2 was canceled. So then the second year, which was last year, I created a grading task force that had parents, teachers, students, and we actually looked line by line at our board policy and our administrative reg, and we wordsmithed, and we talked about what should we add, what should we change, what should we delete. And after 8 meetings, and those meetings were 90 minutes each, we brought a recommended change to the board, and the board approved that. And so coming this fall, and when we open up school in August, we will hold every teacher in secondary to that new board policy.
So, Chris, do you have a message for these parents that might be concerned right now? System is going to change, and a lot of them have been immigrants, so they're looking for kids to go to college. Can you tell us what message you have for these parents.
Yeah, my message is for anyone that is concerned about some of the changes that we have recommended and that the board has approved, is to simply put your faith and your trust in our teachers. Our teachers are the professionals. Our teachers are the ones that design lessons, that facilitate learning, that assess all of our students, and that determine their grades. Some of the changes that we're making is not going to impact a student that is a high achiever. All we want to do is make sure that the grade that your child receives is an accurate reflection of their knowledge of the content standards, that their grade is a fair grade, that the teacher did not use bias to determine their grade, and that grades are a motivational factor for kids to be successful in school. That's all we're looking for in the changes in our policy. And we will continue to look at it each year at the data to determine if there's anything that we implemented that did not have the impact that we thought it would, we'll stop doing it. So this is an ongoing process, and I do not believe it's going to have any significant impact to our top achievers at all. It will benefit all kids, though.
Chris Funk, the superintendent of Dublin District, it was great to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you for the invite. Thank you for the questions, and I enjoyed our conversation.